This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
If I force you to pick two or maybe three things, and maybe you mentioned them, right? But you have things like criminal records, you have court decisions, social media profiles, you know, the employment, the credit check. What are the three things that matter the most that you found?
If I was only to look at the three things, I would say obviously your rent to income ratio is number one. Quality of employment, so make sure that they work, you know, make sure to have that call with the previous employer definitely is very helpful.
Quality of employment? So what does that mean? Who they work for, how much they earned, or how they were as an employee themselves?
Yeah, it's that's a good question, Zane. So on our report, for example, we do try to ping their employment and to on the report to confirm their current employment. Things are changing so quickly now that people might have a job like last week, but they don't have one now, right? So I tell everybody that, hey, if you want to be sure, make sure you call the employer and confirm that they're currently working there, because they might have been there last year or last month and they show up on a credit report, but then they may have been gone or soon to be laid off. So having that conversation with the employer right now is really important to understand kind of the stability of that job. It definitely makes a big difference. Other things to keep in mind, this is an interesting one as well. A big problem now has been relationships. Right. People are not used to being around 24/7 around each other. So a lot of, a lot of breakups, a lot of divorces, and those tend to put a lot of strain on your ability to pay the rent. Because if one of the partners moves out of the property and now you're left with a $3,000 to $4,000 monthly rent you have to cover, you're not going to be able to.
So that's a very good predictor. Some people might not be willing to because they feel that the other party needs to pay.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So what are you going to do? You're going to break the lease. You're going to skip on the last couple of months for rent, or you're just going to sit there and knowing that your lender can evict you and just kind of go on for a free ride for the next few months, right? So those are really important things to keep in mind. For example, I know landlords now that are very reluctant to rent to new couples moving in together. Because they're like, well, they haven't lived together before. Now they're going to be around each other 24/7. How long is that going to last?
Do you feel that AI can replace a human entirely? And if you do or you don't, let's discuss that. But what type of AI too? Is it classification of renters? Is it trying to create a score on renters, some type of linear regression, or what?
It's a good question. I came from kind of like a data science background in banking, and this is what we do, is we try to come up with a number that'll predict the future, right? And it's tough, and also you don't want to. There's definitely some, you know, access to data is an issue, right? Getting good data readily available to train that model is going to be very difficult, especially when it comes to previous rent payments, and that's something we're trying to really address by giving access to the small landlord to use kind of like a free rent collection platform so that all payments are kind of logged. That could be very powerful. The other issue as well is that people tend to adapt to algorithms, right? So if, for example, if what we found, for example, is when the vacancy rates went really low, went really down, it became very, very competitive to find a place. So we saw a spike in like fraudulent documentation, people, you know, changing their credit score on the credit report or changing kind of like pay stubs and stuff like that. I think there's a lot that can be done, but I think ultimately it'll have to be kind of a partnership between looking at the number, at the risk score, and making a couple of like human judgments as well, and just kind of knowing what to look out for when you do make those calls.
So it doesn't sound like AI at all. It just sounds like you're creating weights, and I'm not saying what you're doing. I'm thinking the approach, right? It sounds to me like you find a few key variables, you assign a weight to those variables, then you have a human look over it. Do you see a future though where AI can replace the whole part? I mean, AI is powerful. You know, AI can look at your face and learn so much about you. So it seems simple. Like, why can't you just have AI classify and score someone, and you don't need a human ever?
Well, it is, right? But then you're also dealing with the Fair Housing Act. So, like, there's a lot, again, right? Privacy is a huge issue. Like, what can you have access to? What should you have access to? Are you allowed to kind of plug into somebody's social media profile and get all their private information? Like, there's a lot of ethical questions there as well. So there's definitely a limit to what information you can make use of. AI is king in terms of, like, if you feed it enough data, it'll be the ultimate predictor. The challenge is the data. Like with any model, is if you can get access to the right information, you can make very powerful predictions. But I think that's really the difficulty. Ultimately, in our conversations with the credit bureaus as well, is they're really putting a lot of effort behind this and trying to figure out like a way to build a rent score. And that's the challenge, is how do you get access to the payment information? How do you get access to the truth of if a tenant defaulted or not? Because that's ultimately your target variable. They've partnered up with a lot of the larger property managers to kind of collect their payment information on the tenants and build out that risk score. But again, the challenge is that 60% of all rentals are owned by mom and pop landlords, and they're not organized. They're not tracking their payments. They're not plugged into a system, right? So it is difficult.
Hila, where do you see the market heading? Right now, a very hot trend is the institutionalization of single family rentals, which basically means, just like Bitcoin's eventually going to be institutionalized, there's a switch from mom and pop owners to more private equity, savvy, sophisticated investors. Are you seeing that trend right now? Is that changing the metrics regarding the number of homes owned by the average customer?
We've seen it, all the major cities in Canada, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal. That's definitely the case, right? It's definitely happening now, especially with the appreciating asset value. And I would say that we're in a bit of a weird economy. Like in Canada, real estate and banking and mining, those are the three kind of like major industries. So there's a ton of money going into real estate, a ton of money kind of like private equity buying up. We're seeing a lot of old apartment buildings that were kind of like independently operated being, purchased by some of the larger guys. It'll probably continue. Like anything else, like once that asset starts to suffer or diminish, it'll probably start going back to normal. One of the big factors as well that people are worried about is that, hey, if there is a bit of a burst in the bubble and a lot of the small landlords are kind of forced out of the market, that could be an opportunity for some of the larger guys to really kind of buy up a lot of those small properties and bring them into their kind of a portfolio. And that gives them a lot of supplier power, right? Because now they have a lot more control over the rental stock and ultimately the tenant might suffer. And then you have to bring in also the kind of the whole legal, political stake there, because there's a lot of people out there. We're having protests every other week here where people are out there in the streets are saying that housing should be a right, not a financial asset. So there's a lot of factors. If I could tell you where the market is going, I'd be a very rich man. But these are some of them. These are some of the big forces.
You're sitting in an area where there's so many ethical considerations, right? Yeah. About who should own real estate. Should it be a right or should it be a financial asset? Should you evict a tenant at the cost of the landlord? Or is it right to evict a tenant? How do you use AI? Is it ethical to use social media information?
Yeah.
How do you grapple with the ethical aspects to what you do? That impacts choices for product. What your landlords want might sometimes be at odds with what your customers want. How do you make that call?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's challenging, right? Because you find that we're part of a lot of landlord associations across the country now and a lot of organizations and daily calls. So I'm involved in daily calls even with the municipal government now to figure out like the layout and the plan for some of the rule changes out there. Integrity is number one. So we make sure that everything, that every process that we follow, it falls under the rules, and we're not accessing information and data that we shouldn't be taking advantage of. I think one thing that we can really do to help folks is to highlight the importance of proper screening and proper verification in the outset, to make sure that the tenant that's applying to your property is a good fit, as a way of really kind of mitigating some of these issues, before we get into the entire evictions and kind of rent guarantee aspect of the business. And we're providing we're providing a tool like our rent guarantee financial product to take away some of that risk from landlords, so that we can kind of come in as a mediator in the sense that, hey, we've helped you screen the right tenant. And then for those unforeseen circumstances where, life happens, people lose their jobs and get divorced and you can't always predict that, well, in that case, you can take advantage of our rent guarantee insurance product to spread your risk across the portfolio, just like a large property manager would. But it is a challenging space to be in. I think it is important to have good trust and transparency and clear processes between both parties. And we're constantly thinking about how we can kind of add value to the tenant side as well. One initiative that we're taking on now with our new rent collection platform that we're building is we're providing tips for landlords and tenants to make sure that they're not getting in over their head, overspending on rent, so that they don't get in trouble later on. For students or new to Canada or new to the country, applicants that have no credit history, Our rental collection platform now will actually build out your credit history. So as you're making your rent payments, those will get reported as positive payments to Equifax. So it will actually increase your credit score during your tenure, which is great. So these are some of the small things that we're looking forward to doing. The other big thing as well is that just like how there are bad tenants, there's also bad landlords. So by formalizing some of the processes that landlords and tenants, abide by or follow when kind of managing that interaction, you're bringing some more professionalism into the management aspect of it as well. So I think these are some of the ways that we're kind of really adding value to really.
Awesome. Do you have any questions for me as an entrepreneur, a venture capitalist, or even a real estate investor that might be interesting to go over?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had conversations before, Zane, and we've had a lot of, my challenge now is that we're still very early stage, so I'm always stuck in the weeds, right? I'm dealing with tenants one at a time, or lenders one at a time, or really at the ground level. Whereas you have the luxury of being kind of like at the high level, understanding kind of like where what some cool things are happening in the ecosystem, where the industry is going. So I wanted to kind of flip that question around to you a little bit. In terms of kind of where you see some of the exciting opportunities happening in this space. Where do you see some of the transformative aspects of COVID making an impact in the real estate market, in the prop tech market? What gets you excited about some of the companies and areas of this industry?
Like, prop tech is so full of opportunity. That's why I've decided to make it my focus. And COVID has accelerated already trends that were accelerating. And I really feel this is the one thing that's been needed to get real estate investors a lot more panicky about integrating technology. If there was any reason to delay technology, now when you're facing delinquent tenants who aren't paying, or on the other spectrum, you're having occupancy issues in your office or wherever it might be, or your retail, you're suddenly going to panic and think about solutions. And now there's a cost. Before, real estate owners were making enough money where the mantra was, don't fix it if it ain't broken. And money's been so easy. You buy an asset, it appreciates, you can lever it up, you can 1031 exchange it to get tax benefits from it. It also produces fixed income. It was great. Suddenly, when your entire business model is at risk, you're looking for answers, and there's a cost to waiting. The cost is that you're bleeding cash. You've got a mortgage to pay. So then you want to go and adopt technology. So I think it's a fascinating time for prop tech. Prop tech's getting adopted at a much larger scale now. Regarding some of the bigger trends, I think data is one of the trends which you've touched on. I do think that data is going to be more widely accessible, and I think it will really bring efficiencies. Think about how quant-driven trading is today in the financial industry. You've got hedge funds that use every data point they can about a company to gain some type of price advantage. Well, my friends, the problem with real estate is very different. It's you call up a broker and you ask them what they think about the property. You look at a couple of documents and you try to make your call on what you think the property is worth. You pay an appraisal company a stupid amount of money and they'll give you an appraisal that matches exactly what you're looking for. It's screwed up.
Right.
And there will be more liquidity in real estate transactions. And there'll be better pricing of real estate itself. So the pricing aspect is what I've touched on, where you've got more data you can access. You've got more data science-driven, quant-driven strategies to better price. And then you've got liquidity. So a big trend I'm seeing today is that the average consumer can easily set up an account on Coinbase and buy Bitcoin, or can set up an account on Robinhood and buy buy stocks and trade currency or whatever. That doesn't really exist on a mainstream level for real estate. And I think everyone needs real estate in their portfolio. We had a fun conversation recently with on another podcast for PropTech VC, if you rewind back a few episodes. I think it was with Barr, who is the founder of Agora. And his view is that sometimes it doesn't make sense to buy your own home. It makes sense instead to keep renting, but to buy another home. So if that's true, why is the quote-unquote American dream or global dream always to own your own home? I think there's definitely important to own your own home, but there is an opportunity cost. So why can't you suddenly gain access to more real estate investment opportunities? So the fractionalization, the crowdfunding movement is interesting. We haven't yet made an investment in this space. It's pretty tough and competitive. One of our LPs is the co-founder of CrowdStreet, which is a big real estate crowdfunding platform. But I do think that's going to be interesting, where people can automatically have exposure to real estate. It's easy if you're large and you're a family office or you've got a large wealth manager at a big bank. You can have 10, 20, 30% of your portfolio in real assets. The only way a normal consumer can do it today is to buy their own home or go through the cumbersome process of trying to gain loans and mortgages and take a risk and buy real estate. So I think that's a problem to address. And I've answered the question specific
What do you see the gap there between kind of just investing in a REIT versus, you know, what you're kind of referring to?
Yeah, well, by the way, I mean, there's like 20, 30 different trends, and I've only talked about the ones that are relevant, I think, for this conversation because of your background and the theme of this podcast.
But,
you know, so stay on that topic.
Yeah.
Some people like the idea that they're adding value. And when you buy real estate, they like the fact that I can see it, I can walk up to it, I can manage it locally, I can renovate it the way I want. And don't take that away from someone. I think that's powerful. You don't get that with a REIT. With a REIT, it's more passively managed and it's really a financial play. You know, you got to think about what the underlying asset is worth. You've got to think about the future cash flows and, you know, the track record and the management team itself. And I think public REITs are great. But there's something fun about knowing. And I found this too. My family office, I own, you know, large swaths of self-storage facilities and offices and retail and residential and commercial, you know, multifamily. There's something fun about knowing I own a percentage of that building. That's really such a buzz to drive by something and to think, wow, you know, I it's really bizarre to look at this building and to think I own a fraction of that building. Mm-hmm. I think that's fun. That's much greater than I own a share in a public REIT that has a massive diversified portfolio. You know, so I think that's a fun thing about this asset. You don't get that with anything, unless you're investing in a startup where you own a material portion of the company.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's very similar to kind of being a small angel investor and investing in the companies as opposed to just buying into the NASDAQ, right? So, absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, even Bitcoin doesn't give you that, you know? Like, okay,
I actually have friends.
Yeah. I was talking to her just 2 days ago, and a company is called Buy Properly. What they do is fractional purchases into residential real estate. So they'll go out there and find good assets to buy and basically take care of the management so you don't have to any of those headaches. And as an investor, you can come in and just buy $10,000 into that asset, right? And it is. It's a much more kind of like real thing. The interesting thing, learning that I got from that conversation was that first-time purchases were not the right, you know, that were not the people that were going to her. It was repeat investors that you know, had a couple of properties, knew the business, knew the game, but they just didn't want to have the hassle of having to kind of like maintain the property, look after it, find the right property, because that's a lot of work, right? But they had enough kind of like vision to kind of understand how, you know, how home ownership works, kind of like where you make the money and the cash flow and the appreciation, and they're willing to pull the trigger and kind of invest in it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think that's definitely a really growing kind of area. And I think
what's missing today is a lot of infrastructure to make it easier and accessible to invest in real estate. So your solution is a part of that stack where you're able to screen the tenants.
So they are actually working with us. They plug into our rent guarantee programs, and when they buy a new asset, we guarantee that rental income so that the investor has a guaranteed source of income, which is huge, right?
Yeah, I think when you build a product around making it easy to invest, such as guaranteeing the rent for a landlord or being able to verify the tenant base and put a risk profile around it is key. The other one is management of property. I think you said it yourself there, right? You want to be involved, but how involved do you want to be? You like the feeling of making decisions, but you don't want to be in the building itself, collecting rents and you know, banging on a wall with a hammer. Some people love that, but if you want to be an investor at scale, that might not be the best approach. So technologies that are allowing that, such as tech-enabled property management, is one. We invested in OneRent, which is a tech-enabled property manager for single-family rentals. And, you know, I think that's a core part of the ecosystem that's missing today. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, look, this was a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you have any final last bits of advice to the audience who's listening? Any final bits of knowledge or wisdom you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, out of all the conversations or all the topics that we touched upon today, Zane, I think, you know, the why is king, right? So knowing the why, knowing the industry, knowing the business, like there's no substitute for that. But I think one thing that we left out is what's the why for you? Like, why do you care? Like, what's, you know, where's the passion, right? Because you do, like, you talk to your friends who are entrepreneurs and you kind of get involved in the community and you learn a lot about kind of like all the exciting things that could happen. But just you need to be aware that there's a lot of work. Like, you're going to be doing this for the next 3 to 5 years and it'll take over your entire life, right? So you need to have a why for yourself, what, you know, that gets you up every morning, that it makes you passionate about tackling this issue or this problem. And because that'll be a very big kind of, I think, contributor to your success. So thanks for having me. This is fantastic. Awesome.
Great.